Well, greetings, everyone, and welcome to the Law Hour and Editorial Review. The Law Hour is sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. Now, the Law Hour is an educational service brought to you in the public interest. I'm your narrator, George Gordon. Now, the Law Hour and Editorial Review is heard nationally and internationally 7 days a week here in the United States and in more than 120 countries worldwide over the Internet. For more information about the Law Hour and Editorial Review, please visit our webpage at georgegordon.org. Again, that's georgegordon.org. Now, the Law Hour and Editorial Review brings you important information about law, science, education, politics, religion, health, history, economics, news, and current events. So stay tuned for tonight's special report on the credit crisis when we come back. You know, 3,300 years ago, Moses instructed our fathers. He said, "You shall not have in your bag diverse weights of great and small. You shall not have in your house diverse measures of great and small, but you shall have a perfect and a just weight. A perfect and a just measure shall you have." Now, you know, our founding fathers at the Constitutional Convention back in 1787 followed that scriptural principle of law when they put into our Constitution, at Article 1, Section 10, these 17 words. It says, "No state shall make anything but gold or silver coin a tender in payment of debts." But back in 1933, President Roosevelt took our gold away, and in 1964, President Johnson took our silver coin out of circulation. Now, in place of just weights and balances, these two presidents have introduced into our current practice, our monetary practice now, the first, second, and fifth planks of the Communist Manifesto under our monetary system. They have given us Federal Reserve notes in place of gold-backed treasury bills. And they've given us clad coin in place of silver coins. So in the intervening 70 years or so, we Americans have now gone from being the world's number one creditor nation until today we're the world's number one debtor nation. Now, who do you think were the better financial planners for our nation, Moses and our founding fathers, or Franklin D. Roosevelt and Lyndon Baines Johnson? Now, if you'd like to learn more about hard money and how to use it properly, it's another of the many lessons that we teach in our business school, which we conduct here several times a year at the law school in Isabel, Missouri. Now, if you'd like to learn more, why don't you call and order our free general law CD package? That's the place to start. It's free. It doesn't cost anything. It's a four-hour commentary on the law in general. It's educational. It's informative. It's entertaining. Best of all, it's free. You can call and order one right now. The number is 417-273-4967. Again, that's area code 417-273-4967. Now, our business school is also available on compact disc for adult home study. If you're online, you can go to our website, georgegordon.org, georgegordon.org. Just click on the email and send us an email request for that free general law CD package. Once more, that's georgegordon.org, or you can call us direct at 417-273-4967. All right, we've been talking about the credit crisis over here, and the other day I said I was going to tell you a story here about the parable of the cards so that we could understand how this monetary system that we use here in the United States, indeed it's used worldwide now, it has now spread to the central banks of every nation in the world, and it's lending money into circulation as opposed to working money into circulation. So when your government wants to put into circulation more money, add liquidity to the economy, where do they go to get the money? Do they go to the bank? I mean, you know, if you want money, you go to the bank, or you go to a lending company to borrow money. You want to buy a house, you go to a mortgage company and you borrow the money to buy the house. You want to buy a car, you go down to the car dealer and you sign some pieces of paper. You don't know what they are or what they say, but you sign some pieces of paper and you agree to make monthly payments of $300 or $400 a month. Well, that money comes from someplace. All money comes into circulation from a source. And there's a system out there. Most people don't understand how that system works. But it's definitely unscriptural. They're not putting money into circulation there at the Federal Reserve as they were instructed to do by Moses out at Mount Sinai. That's not the program. And as a result of that, there is an end game. There is a result that comes from it. The credit crisis that we're seeing unfold before our eyes today has a cause, and there's an effect. It's not a big mystery. Years ago, I said, this is going to come to a no-good end. And I learned that from my granddad, who in 1950 told me, this is going to come to a no-good end. And that's because when you borrow all this money into circulation, it's going to end up in a depression. The 1930s depression was fully predictable based upon the Federal Reserve Act of 1913. And the current economic crisis was fully predictable. Fully predictable. What we couldn't do is predict when it was going to happen. I thought it was going to happen in 1979. I thought it was going to happen in 1992. I thought this is it in 2001. I was wrong three times out of three. But now it's finally happened. I wasn't wrong when I said this is going to come to a no good end. I got that right out of the Bible. I got that right directly from Moses, who got it directly from God, that this is going to come to a bad end. But now we need to understand, why does paper money, why does debt, why does usury lead us to depression? Because we didn't learn anything from the last depression. We're going to do just exactly today what we did the last time it failed. And let me make another prediction. This economic crisis will come to an end. And if time goes on 50 or 100 years from now, there will be another depression and another economic crisis that will be enveloping your children, your grandchildren, and your great-grandchildren, because they will not have learned anything from the Great Depression of 2008. Nobody's learned anything over the last 5,000 years. We haven't learned anything today, and there isn't any reason to believe that our children are going to learn anything from our experience today. Everybody has to reinvent the wheel. Now, some of us want to know why it works that way. That's the way my brain works. My mind says, okay, I can see that that Federal Reserve Act ended in depression in the 1930s, but why does it end in depression? What causes that? If there's one complaint I've had about God from the very beginning is that he tells you, don't do this or don't do that or do this or do something else. But he rarely, if ever, tells you why you need to do it that way. You know, you got a law that says thou shalt not commit adultery. No explanation as to why. Now, we can observe adultery. We can observe Flo's whorehouse. We can observe AIDS, herpes, VD. We can observe divorce and juvenile delinquency. We see the causes and we see the effect. God never sat there and said, let me explain this to you. Here's why this won't work. Now, you don't have any problem with bulls breeding 15 cows, but you sure have a problem over here when you got a man who's trying to breed 15 women. There's just something about this that doesn't work nearly as well as cattle in the pasture. And so, of course, the question arises, well, why? Why is it that it doesn't work that way? Okay, now, it isn't a great mystery. We can figure this out. And I suppose maybe that's why God did it that way. He said, well, I'm going to let you guys figure this out. So go to work on the problem. Now, with this monetary problem, we've got a lot of experience. I mean, you know, this isn't the first time we've had a monetary crisis here in the United States. We had it in the 1930s. We've got it now. We had it in 1783. And there are three big events that occurred in the United States where our monetary system just absolutely collapsed. Three times. This is the third time. Now, we've had a lot of bumpy roads. We've had a lot of recessions. You know, we've had a lot of, you know, short-term depressions and economic readjustments. Now, we were told three times in the Bible, these three stories here, and it has to do with debt. We were told not to have excessive debt. The debt has to be forgiven once every 7 years. Everybody in the country has to go back to zero, and we reset the clock once every 7 years, and then once every 50 years. So it actually occurs eight times in 50 years or 16 times per century. There's a resetting of the clock. Okay, now that's on debt. It's a debt moratorium. We were instructed in the Bible not to practice usury. Do not charge interest. Do not pay interest. Doesn't explain why, but you know we can figure out why, and I'm going to tell you why. And it says, don't use unjust weights and balances twice. Two laws. Don't use paper money. And so you've got Leviticus 19:35 and 36 says, don't use paper money. You've got Exodus 22:25 through 27 says, don't practice usury. And you've got Leviticus 25:1 through 9 says, you've got to have a debt release once every 7 years. And so it isn't that debt of and by itself is a crime. It's the continued extension of the debt in perpetuity that's the crime. It has to come to an end, and God said the time frame for debt is once every 7 years you've got to wipe the slate clean. Now, we're not going to practice that, and Barack Obama certainly isn't going to bring that kind of change into our monetary system. I'm not deaf, dumb, and blind now. But for you and I, we need to understand here's how the economic system works, and here's why it works that way. And if you practice this economic system, you're going to make a lot of property, and if you don't, you're going to end up in the poorhouse. That's just that simple. There's choices to be made here. And it doesn't require, this is the best part about the whole Ten Commandment plan, it doesn't require anybody else in the United States of America or Australia or Canada or wherever you live in the world, Japan, Korea, I don't care. It doesn't require anybody else in Japan practicing this economic system. I don't care. I just need to practice it. And if I practice it, I'll get the benefits that come from it. That's why the other day I said to you, I said, the worst thing you can do in a depression is to intervene in it. It's like a weapon, and you're going to get it. And the sooner you get it and get it over with, the better. And I showed you 1921, we did that. The 1921-22 depression lasted about 18 months. That's it. A flash in the pan. It was swift. It was severe. It burned and it hurt real bad, but it was over in a short order. But the 1930s depression drug on for 10 or 11 years, from 29 to 41, you know, 12 years. And the mistakes that we made then we're making right now. And so we're going to intervene politically into the economic system. When you mix the politics with the economics, you get an even worse result. If you practice economics with the 10 planks to the Communist Manifesto, you get a bad result. If you mix politics with it, you get an even worse result, and that's where we're headed today. Now, I'm one of the few guys around. I'm not complaining about Barack Obama. I'm not complaining about George Bush or the Federal Reserve or the economic system. I'm going to profit from it. I can see what's coming. I can see what's happening. I know what they're going to do because they're telling us every day. I get a report. You know, I watch Brian Williams in the NBC News, and then Brian comes out and he says, here's what we're going to do. And I say, wow. Okay, well, if that's what you people want to do, you know, let me get out of your way. But let me see if I can position myself to make a profit. So let's learn how to do this. Franklin Sanders wrote an article in his October 2008 paper, and it's called The Parable of the Cards. Parable of the Cards. I'm going to tell you a story. Story time. Let's learn a lesson from a story. Several years ago, I published an article that criticized a Nevada man, or a Nevada bill, rather, to mint silver coins. I charged the bill with fraud as a fiat money scheme dressed up in silver. And then ignorance stood up. That article drew an astonishing number of responses. Some people questioned me, and they were intelligent, and some were appallingly ignorant. And some of the responses were just downright rude. And astonishingly, some of the most ignorant and rude came from people who, I take it, fancy themselves as the friends of silver, the friends of gold, the friends of sound money. The internet, it seems, has not made people wiser, nor has it made more knowledgeable. It has only made propagating ignorance faster and more efficient. Now, Will Rogers made this observation. He said, the trouble with people is not what they don't know, but what they know, or that they know so much that just ain't so. You know, people have opinions, and I'm sitting back here, you know, respecting people's opinions. I get letters in here, too. Some of them are pretty wise, and some of them are pretty ignorant. And so I say, well, let's see if we can't understand why this works this way. Because the people that are propagating this financial crisis on the world, they know and understand every word I'm telling you. They're not ignorant. President Bush isn't sitting there wringing his hands wondering, oh my, how did this economic crisis happen? Hell, it was planned. Just like those trade powers. Planned. He knew exactly how it was going to come out. And there's an agenda, there's a motive that goes with this. Let me tell you something here about law. See, you've got a criminal, and this criminal over here is going to commit a criminal act. But oftentimes that criminal act is accompanied by an act of, and we call this being an accessory before the fact. That is, if you knew that what you're about to enter into is a crime, then you become an accessory before the fact. If you learn about this crime, and then you cover it up, or you participate in it after the fact, then you're an accessory after the fact. And so Franklin Sanders wrote an article that says, who is the villain? And we identified the villain as the Federal Reserve, and we identified the problem with the paper money. But boys and girls, all of that paper money was lent into circulation, and you had to go down and sign the papers and borrow the money and agree to pay the interest. When you got that mortgage on your house, nobody put a gun to your head now. You went down to the bank, you filled out a bunch of papers and signed your name down at the bottom. You were a willing accessory before the fact. Now, it may have been ignorance on your part. Maybe you didn't understand that there were three laws here in the Bible on debt, usury, and paper money. I don't know what you knew or what you didn't know. But you do not have to know that there's a law against debt, usury, and paper money to suffer the effects of it. You know, you go down to the whorehouse. You don't have to know anything about health. You don't have to know anything about venereal disease to learn. Hell, when you come out of there and you end up with gonorrhea or syphilis, you know, well, you learned, didn't you? Now, of course, if you knew in advance that that whorehouse down there is full of disease, you know, you might say, oh, well, I'm going to stay away from there. I'm going to avoid that like AIDS, herpes, and VD, you know. But when it comes to money and monetary affairs, you know, most people, you know, they just willingly just walk right in the door, sign the papers, and walk out. And, you know, that's the way they buy their cars or big screen TVs and buy their houses. Now, we were told not to do that, and somebody's going to write me an email and say, well, you know, well, how would you buy a house, you know, if you didn't have a mortgage? Well, I've bought lots of houses, son, and I didn't have any mortgage on them. One-third of the houses in America today do not have a mortgage on them. And not every one of those people bought those houses with a mortgage. Now, just because you're ignorant, don't know how to buy a house without putting yourself in debt and paying usury and interest and using paper money and paying this debt for 30 years, just because you're ignorant, don't know how to do that, doesn't mean that I'm ignorant and I don't know how. Now, come on, let's wake up here. Smell the coffee. Now, there's some ancient wisdom that comes out of this. So listen to this parable now, the parable of the carts. When money is lent into circulation, which is the way the Federal Reserve does it today, there's an ultimate outcome to that. There's a deficiency involved here that most people don't understand. And it's that deficiency over here that is the barb on the hook. They're going to hook you. So if you're in debt and you've got a mortgage on your house, they got you. If you've got a car and you're making payments, they got you. Now, if you're the fish that's on the hook, you got to shake that hook. You got to get the hell off this thing. I mean, if you want to make money and come out of this thing on top, you know, you got to get to, I mentioned this earlier, you got to get to zero COD. That's your first thing. When people walk into my business school, I tell them, come right out of the sheet. I say, look, how many of you people are in debt? Everybody raises their hand. Okay, first thing we got to do is get you out of debt. You can't make any money in debt. People that have money aren't in debt. Come on, let's wake up. Now, I know somebody's going to say, well, you know, here I'm driving a new car and I'm living in a nice house and I've got a lot of debt. But you don't own a house and you don't own a car. You're driving somebody else's car, living in somebody else's house. And the minute you don't make your payments on there, he's going to evict you. And then you're going to be walking and living under a bridge. Now, that's the way reality is at. That's where you're headed. Now, you'd be better off if you owned that house free and clear and you owned that car free and clear and you didn't have any debt and you had $100,000 in gold buried in the hole in the ground. I think you'd be better off that way. Now, no matter how long you study or you study money, certain fundamental principles remain clear. And chief among those stands this principle that money must offer value for value or it will defraud the many and enrich the few. There are, in fact, only two schools of monetary thought. It's the fiat money school, which believes that money is merely a social construct, Whatever society declares money to be, that's what it is. And in their view, money in itself is valueless. It's only artificial social convention that gives it value. The value school believes that all money should offer value for value, that the money itself must have value in the marketplace, independent of social or governmental artifice. Now, another principle recognized since ancient times by Aristotle, among others, is that unrestricted usury, that is, the taking of interest, is impossible with a sound money system. The fiat system that presently rules us is backed by nothing, of course, but debt, and all of our money is borrowed into existence, and that single fact determines the entire system, and it predicts that it will inevitably unfold into instability, tyranny, collapse, and poverty. Every single time. Throughout history, it's always worked out that way. There's no exceptions to the rule. Now, it is true you can go to the whorehouse, tear off a piece, and not come out with VD. I don't deny that. It is true. But if you keep after it, the ultimate end is going to be VD. You know, just keep doing it and doing it and doing it, and there's an ultimate end that comes from it. So the same thing's true here with economics. You know, it is true that there are some winners and losers in a casino. There are winners and losers on the stock market. There's winners and losers in the bond market. There's winners and losers that buy, sell, and trade real estate. I don't deny that. Hell, I made a lot of money buying and selling and trading real estate, and I used mortgages and borrowed and so on. But the ultimate end, when I got to the end of the game, I lost it all. Now, I've been through this 3 or 4 times, and so I can tell you from personal experience. You know, I went from zero to $1 million, and then back to zero, and up to $1 million, and then back to zero, and up to $1 million. And I've been there. I liked old George Patton's observation. He said, it's not how high you climb on the ladder. It's how well you bounce when you fall off. Now, so far, I've bounced pretty well. I went to the top, and I fell off, and I went to the top, and I fell off, and I went to the top and fell off. You know, and after I recovered from it, I said, you know, what the hell's causing this? What is it about this thing that I can go out and make all this money? And then some guy comes along and rips it off and takes it all away from me. And I go out and make more money, and some guy comes along and rips it all off, takes it away from me. How in the hell do I make this money and hang on to it? What do I have to do? So when Sanders says, you know, there's just two systems out here, he calls it the fiat money system and the value system. Right? That's his label. I call it the 10 planks to the Communist Manifesto system and the 10 Commandments system. He's talking about the same thing. In the Ten Commandments system, we talk about value. That is, we go out and we use labor to pull the gold and silver out of the ground. And we put the gold and silver into circulation by labor. The fiat money system, we put money into circulation by lending it into circulation. And that's the way you got your mortgage money into circulation. The bank loaned you $50,000 to buy a house. And it's your labor that they're collecting on. You go out and work and produce something, and you take a portion of that and make your monthly payment. At the end of 30 years, you buy one house for you and two houses for the banker. Now, that's the way that comes down. He's dealing in property by use of Federal Reserve notes. At the end of the game, at the end of 30 years, you have made your payments every month, 360 payments. And when it's all said and done, you get one house, and the banker gets two houses. Now, you produced all three houses. The banker gets two for lending you the money. Where did the banker get the money to lend? Where did the banker get the money to lend? Listen up. Now, these systems are built of articulated members, and what would you think of a mechanic who knew all about carburetors and all of his coconut shells? You know, or, see, I'm on the wrong page here. I'm going to get back here. It's a parable. And he knew all about carburetors and brakes, and he knows all about air conditioners and transmissions, but he had never seen all of the parts assembled together into an automobile. What would you think of a chef who had only studied food in cans but had never prepared a meal from scratch? So if we only study the members without studying how they fit and work together, we understand only disconnected, unarticulated facts, unrelated to the whole system. We know everything about the parts, but nothing about the whole. Now, this is the way they pass this off on you. So they send you to school, and they teach you how to pay your taxes. They teach you how to write checks. They teach you how to put money in the bank. But they don't teach you where this money comes from, or how it gets into circulation, or how it's taken out of circulation, or how the increase of the money supply, M1, M2, M3. See, unless you've been to college and studied economics, so you don't know anything about that. I was watching Frontline the other day, and this guy, who is an economist, he goes, and he's talking to the CEO of a corporation, and they're sitting in the office, and the secretary comes in and brings them coffee and one thing and another. And so the economist turns to the CEO, and he says, do you have a retirement program? And the CEO said, yes, I do have a retirement program. And he says, that secretary that just came in here, would you like her to manage your retirement program? And the CEO looked at the economist and said, are you mad? Of course I wouldn't have my secretary manage my retirement portfolio. That's preposterous. And the economist said, but Mr. CEO, you have that secretary managing her 401k, you require that she manages her retirement fund, but you wouldn't let her manage your retirement fund. So what makes you think that she's competent to handle her retirement fund if she's not competent to handle yours? And so these companies out here, they've gotten away from these fixed pension programs and converted their employees to 401ks, and these people, by the tens of millions, know absolutely nothing about the economy, know nothing about money. They think they do. They honest to God believe that they're very savvy monetary managers investing in the stock market and so on. I pointed this out to you. Nobody's made a dime off the stock market investing in stocks for the long haul. The only guys that make money on stocks are the brokers and the dealers and the salesmen, and the rest of us take it in the shorts. And even if you invested $10,000 in 1960 and sold out in 2000 and made $70,000, you lost $3,800 in purchasing power and then thought you made a big fat profit off of it and paid a 28% capital gain tax on the $60,000. Then come on. And then you tell me that you're a money manager. You tell me that you're savvy. Been to college, have you? All right. Now, fiat money never appears as an isolated phenomenon. It is not merely a single evil conspiracy to suppress silver and gold, as some seem to think, having drunk too deep at the internet's Pyrian Spring. Seeing only that, they've got it all wrong. Rather, fiat money aims always to achieve control over a whole society, and indeed the whole world. It will inevitably enslave a people and transfer all of their assets into the hands of a few. And that's where you're at right now. The bankers are in total control of the United States of America. They simply walk into Congress and say, give us $700 billion. Hey, give us $20 billion. Hey, take over the liabilities of AIG. Hey, take over the liabilities of Citigroup and pay us $20 billion to boot. And that's what's coming down. You've been watching this. I'm not telling you something that you don't already know. They're already in total control. But how did they get total control? They didn't have it in 1900. But they've got it today. So something happened in the meantime that gave them this control and took that control away from you. And they did it by debt, usury, and paper money. And you know, you participated in that debt, you participated in that usury, and you participated in that paper money. And that's why you're hurting today. So the logical thing to do is let's dump the debt, quit the usury, and throw the paper money away. And that's where reality is at. Hey, we're at the halfway point here. Let me give you a reminder that you are listening to The Law Hour, an editorial review sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabel, Missouri. Now, The Law Hour is heard 7 days a week here in the United States, and we're heard around the world in more than 120 countries daily over the internet and radio. Now, if you'd like more information about the law school and The Law Hour, then please go to our website. Remember, that's georgegordon.org, georgegordon.org. Now, the law school teaches family law, tax law, courtroom strategy and procedure, business law, agricultural law, civil rights, and biblical law from a scriptural perspective, non-state schools and all. The law school is a private, non-commercial, non-profit, non-sectarian law school that is open to individuals but by prearrangement. The law school conducts a homeschooling program for adults on compact desk, and the Law Hour website is updated every week and has our radio log schedule and archives, all of which can be accessed through our webpage at georgegordon.org, georgegordon.org. All of these Law Hour programs are archived on the internet by title and date for your listening convenience, and the Law Hour is an educational service brought to you in the public interest. Now, the law school offers a free 4-hour introductory CD package. Be sure to order one by calling the law school and asking for it. Call us at 417-273-4967. Say, hey, I'd like to have one of those. Once more, that's area code 417-273-4967. Our old ultimate aim here is to sell you a school, but before you get involved in school, you got to find out, well, is this for me? This isn't for everybody. Not everybody can handle this. And so rather than get involved in something, spend a lot of money on something you don't need, can't use, shouldn't have, and don't want, why don't you get the free CDs, take a look at it, and say, hey, that sounds pretty good, I'd like to learn more, or just say, well, to hell with this, I don't want to get involved in that. See how simple that is? Now, the sources of information that we use on this program are true, accurate, and correct, at least to the best of our knowledge and belief. And the Law Hour editorial review gives credit to those authors and publications that we use on this program. So we often endorse or recommend books, papers, periodicals, and newsletters to our listeners. But these endorsements or recommendations that we give don't mean that those authors or publications that we're endorsing and recommending are necessarily going to reciprocate and endorse and recommend the Law Hour and editorial review. They might hate our guts. Keep in mind that most of these authors and publications that we cite here on the Law Hour and editorial review may be hostile, political, they may be religious or economic, they can be sectarian or racial, they may even be ethnic partisans, whose viewpoint may not be totally endorsed by the Law Hour and editorial review. We don't have a whole lot of friends out there. Most of these people, I always tell people, if you listen to the Law Hour very long, you'll become offended, and I'll offend you. And that's what happens. If you tell somebody that where the rubber meets the road, if no, from time to time they get offended, and then they write you nasty letters and say, well, you know, good low down so-and-so. But these opinions, beliefs, comments, views, and expressions that you hear on this program, they're mine and they're mine alone. And they do not necessarily represent now the views or the beliefs or the opinions of the advertisers, the sponsors, the management, or the staff of this radio network or this local radio station. So don't blame them. It wasn't them. Just blame me. So if you'd like more information about the Law Hour and editorial review, then please go to our website. That's georgegordon.org, georgegordon.org, or you can call us direct, 417-273-4967. 67. All right, back to the card game here. Let's get back to some important cards. Now, the fiat money never appears as an isolated phenomenon. Now, when you miss this point, then you can't understand fiat money. That's what the bottom line is. Like war and death, fiat money always walks hand in hand with debt, usury, income tax, oligarchy, big government, militarism, and in the end, it always produces tyranny and impoverishment. Let me read that to you again. In fact, I think I'll underline that. This is Franklin Sanders now. You might want to write this down. Franklin Sanders. He's got a phone number here. It's 888-218-9226. If you'd like a copy of this October 2008 paper, why don't you call him and subscribe? I recommend the subscription to support the money changer because you support Walmart and they support China. So why don't you support the money changer and support some guy here in America? It's a wild new idea. To hell with the Chinese. And then let's buy American. And this newsletter is American. And this guy is explaining to you a very, very important fundamental of economics. Every truck driver, every American, every 11-year-old schoolgirl or schoolboy should understand this. Because if you did, the bankers could not take your country away from you. Now, they've already taken it away. So if you're sitting here saying, what do we do to save America? Hell, it's already gone. Gone. You can forget about saving this ship. It's a goner. Get the hell off while you still can. And this is called the Parable of the Cards. Call Franklin Sanders. That number again, 888-218-9226. Tell him you want the Parable of the Cards story so that you can enmesh yourself in it and figure out, no, this is what Paulson and Bernanke and George Bush are up to. Here's what Robert Rubin and our new Obama president, the change man, have in store for us. And then get the hell off this train, you know, before it runs off the tracks. So let's try this one again. If you miss this point, you won't be able to understand fiat money. Like war and death, fiat money always walks hand in hand with debt, usury, income tax, oligarchy, big government, militarism, and in the end, it always, without fail, produces tyranny and impoverishment. And that's where you're headed. You're headed for a big government tyranny and impoverishment. They're going to take everything away from you. I mentioned this to you yesterday. Now, if you got a 401k plan, here's where the plan's going. They're going to come in here now for all you baby boomers out there that didn't save enough money, you know, for your retirement. And the government's going to come in and say, well, since you didn't do it, then we're going to have to do it for you. So we're going to take over all the private 401ks and Kroger plans and private retirements and put them into a new big bureaucracy over here, probably under Social Security, and dole the money out to you. Because this is where the pension, they got a government agency here. When United Airlines screws all of their employees out of their pension fund, well, then those people have to go to the government. The government has a pension fund, see. And then it's going to be doled out there. Employees are incompetent people that have to have a guardian, and the guardian will dole it out for them. That's the way that works. All right, now, fiat money is not just an isolated enactment. It's the juggler vein of the system, and the parable of the cards below will illustrate the outcome of borrowing money into existence. This is the way the game's played. We borrow the money into existence, and you have to participate in the game. And the minute you quit participating in the game, then it takes you off the 10 planks to the manifesto and puts you into the Ten Commandment model. You know, there's only two models out here. There isn't 2, 10, 20, or 50. There's just two. You're either going to plan and practice the Ten Commandment model, or you're going to plan and practice the Ten Plank model. Now, we used to practice the Ten Commandment model up until about 1913, and we did very well. I pointed that out to you the other day. We became the wealthiest, most powerful nation in the world, militarily, politically, economically. And then we threw it all away. And there was a reason. There's a cause for it. Now, here's the parable of the cards. It came to pass that five men, strangers all, took ship for a distant land. And whilst the ship was in the way, a fierce storm overtook it, and it sank, and all aboard drowned, save for the five passengers who swam to a deserted island. And when they awoke, they traversed the whole island, and they found fruit and game in abundance, but very little in the way of entertainment. Wherefore, the first stranger, whose name was Everyman, said to his companions, who were named Industry, Finance, and Government, he said, go to, and truly we will die of boredom in this place long before starvation gets to us. Let us therefore play a game of cards. So Industry and Finance and Government did smile on Everyman, and they rejoiced at this pleasant suggestion. But then sadness overcame them, and then their countenances darkened, and Industry said, alas, cards, but we have none. Now the fifth stranger was named Banker, and Banker stood in the coolness of the shadows, eavesdropping. And when Industry discovered that they had no cards, Banker stepped forward out of the shadows and whispered, let not thy brothers be downcast, and neither let them fret for want of cards. For behold, said he, the banker, pulling a deck of cards from his pocket, see, here, cards have I in abundance. And I will lend freely upon execution of certain necessary mortgages, notes, and encumbrances upon all of your real and personal property. And lo, the countenance of every man, industry, finance, and government did brighten, and they rejoiced with one another, for they were simple men and trusted themselves to banker. For behold, said they, doth not banker desire our good? And will he not freely lend us all things, even the cards that we so desire? So then banker did lend to every man, industry, finance, and government 13 cards each, but upon this condition, that every man, industry, government, and finance might borrow the cards for but 1 hour only, and at the end of the hour, they must each return to the banker 14 cards each, or they must forfeit all of their mortgaged property and their assets. And in return for the 13 cards loaned to them, every player did execute certain necessary mortgages, notes, and encumbrances upon all of their real and personal property. And now banker had them, and banker knew it. But every man, industry, finance, and government did not have a clue as to what the problem was. And so the four, every man, industry, finance, and government, played cards. And at the end of the hour, every man had only 10 cards, while government, industry, and finance were possessed of 14 cards apiece. And with great show of sadness and brotherly commiseration, banker did dispossess every man and foreclosed upon him, and he did take his duffel bag, and he took all of his coconut shells, and took his flip-flops, and all of his clothing, until every man stood naked under the sun, as in the day that he was born, without a card to his name, and verily, every man was out of the game. Yet were not government, industry, and finance downcast by every man's loss? For in their haste to play cards, they forgot his need, and they heeded not the warning of his downfall. So they clamored again to banker, give us cards again, that we may play and make merry, and while away our time in this deserted place. And banker came close, and he said, brothers, gladly will I lend again to thee. Only give me mortgages, notes, and encumbrances upon all of your real and personal property. And they did execute the same. And banker did lend 17 cards to industry, to finance, and government, demanding at the hour's end the return of 18 cards apiece. And lo, they did play. And when the game was over, alas, industry had but 15 cards, and government and finance had 18. And so banker did foreclose upon industry. And the banker did take his duffel bag and his pocket knife, wherewith he made clever things for his brothers, and his sandals, and all of his clothing, until industry stood naked under the sun. And in the day that he was born, without a card to his name, and barely he too was out of the game and busted clean flat. But government and finance must play yet again, and banker must lend to them, and he did. And they did, and finance met the same fate as every man in industry, and they gathered themselves together naked and wretched under a palm tree, watching banker and government play the last hand. And lo, banker did win, and he took from government all that the government owned. And then government joined every man, industry, finance, and naked under the palm trees, they lamented the low estate whereinto their borrowing had brought them, and wot not what next to do. So then government asked his brothers, well, why sit we here idle? For although we be poor, mayhap have we something left that we may offer as collateral, and yet play cards again. And the others said, yea, and amen, and what else have we? And so they approached banker, right humbly, and they gat them down on their knees and entreated banker, and said, O banker, we have nothing left for collateral, but lo, in the future we will once again have stuff. And between now and then we will have stuff, and we will gladly execute in your favor mortgages, notes, and encumbrances on all of our future stuff. But only lend us cards again, for the boredom of this place surpasseth all bearing, and our souls are like to expire within us if we cannot play cards, and what availeth us of life or liberty without cards? And banker smiled a great smile, and he welcomed this offer. And he did cheerfully, and he quickly offered for their signature the mortgages, notes, and encumbrances on all of their future stuff, and they did sign. And banker dealt out cards, and again they played. And in the course of time, and in the course of playing cards, banker did own all of the future stuff of every man in industry and government and finance. And so verily banker did own it all their goods, all their lands, all their labors, and all their children's labors, and their children's children's labors, world without end. And banker did wax fat. And every man in industry and finance and government were glad. And they did honor to the banker, and they rejoiced to serve the bank, and for verily they loved playing cards, and unless they served him, how else could they get cards? And here endeth the parable of the cards. Isn't that exactly what you see happening right now with Citigroup, AIG? Hey, you know, the bankers over here are not dumbbells. These people are very shrewd, very wise, and they understand finance, and here's the way the game is played. If you've got 52 cards in the deck, and we lend 13 cards to four players, and we let you play, and at the end of the game, somebody's going to have more than 13 cards. And the guys that have more than 13 cards mean that somebody in the game is going to have less than 13 cards. Because you see, there's only 52 cards in the deck. 4 times 13 is 52. So where are you going to get that 14th card to pay the interest back, you four players? See, the bank, he creates the $30,000 or $50,000 mortgage on your house right out of thin air. He just hands you a piece of paper, says sign right here, and agree to pay us the $50,000 plus interest. But you see, the economy only has the $50,000. He did not create the interest for you to pay back. And so the only way that you can get interest into the economy is to continually expand the economy. That's why the economy has to grow every year by 2 or 3% so that you can pay back the interest. And if at any time the economy doesn't grow, then you have a contraction. Now, this is why God comes along and he says, now you can't practice usury and interest, and that's because it'll double the principal. Now, listen to this story. It's the parable of the horseshoes. A little boy, 12 years old, is sent by his daddy with the family horse to the farrier, that's the horseshoer, to get the horseshoed for $12. That's what it costs to shoe the horse, 12 bucks. He gives the little boy the $12. The boy gets on the horse, rides into town. He pulls up to the farrier and he says, my daddy has sent me to shoe the horse. And the farrier says, well, lucky little boy that you are. I have horseshoes and horseshoe nails and I will gladly shoe your horse. Furthermore, I have a special today. I will shoe your horse by first giving you the horseshoes free of charge upon this condition, that you pay me 1 penny for the first nail, 2 pennies for the second nail, 4 pennies for the third nail, and we will double the amount 32 times. And you can take the change and go to the ice cream store and buy ice cream and candy. And the little boy, he said, wow, what a deal. I get the horseshoes free, and here they are in my hand. And all I have to do is agree to pay a penny for the first nail. That's nowhere near 1,200 pennies. And then 2 cents, and then 4 cents, and just double it 32 times. Now there's your homework assignment, boys and girls. You just take 1 penny and double that to 2 pennies, and then double that to 4 pennies, and then to 8 pennies, and then to 12 pennies, I mean 16 pennies, rather, 16, and then to 32, and then to 64, and then to 128, and then to 256. Now look at this, 1, 2, 4, 8, 16, 32, 64, 128. That's 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8. On the 8th penny, cost you $1.28. Doesn't sound like much so far. The first horseshoe is on the horse, and it cost us $2.55 total. 1 plus 2 plus 4 plus 8 plus 16 plus 32 plus 64 plus 128 equals $2.55. But now, when we got 256, the next one doubles to 512, and then 10, 24, and then 20, 48, and then 40, 96. Uh-oh, something went wrong here. Something went wrong. Because on the ninth nail, it cost us $5.12. Excuse me, the ninth nail cost $2.56, and the tenth nail cost $5.12, and the 11th nail cost $10.24, and the 12th nail cost $20.48. Uh-oh, we're way over our $12 budget, aren't we? All right, now there's what we call the doubling factor. This is called the miracle of compounding. And this is why in the Bible God has prohibited usury. And that's because the usury will compound the principal until it doubles, and it will double in so many years. So what you find is the doubling factor. And once you find the doubling factor, once you find that doubling factor, it's going to lead you to rack and ruin. That's why you can't pay interest. That's why once every 7 years, you have to free all of the debtors from their debt. Because if you don't, you will impoverish them, take all of their property away from them, and reduce them to feudal serfs, which is exactly where America is today. I hear people saying, America is the richest nation in the world. Excuse me, pardon me. Let me through here, please. Excuse me. Isn't wealth an accumulation of money or property? Can you tell me how much money or property the average American has? Have you people ever calculated how much money you owe on your balance sheet? Have you people ever considered how much surety underwriters you have become guaranteeing the debt of the United States of America, the debt of Michigan, the debt of your county, the debt of your city, the debts that you have on your mortgage, your automobile, your big screen TV? Have you considered all these debts? Do you think that you can sign all of these pieces of paper and agree to make all of these payments and then renege? Do you believe that? Is that the way you've lived your lives? Honest to God, do you believe that you can sign, take all of this property, use it, consume it, and then never pay? Let me show you the ultimate outcome. It's in Deuteronomy 28, verse 68, last verse. And it says, and then the Eternal shall bring you into Egypt again with ships, by the way whereof I spoke unto you, and you shall see it no more again. And there you shall be sold unto your enemies for bondsmen and bondwomen, and no man shall buy you. Boys and girls, in Australia, New Zealand, Canada, the United States, you are going to be sold into bond servitude. And somebody says, oh, well, you can't do that. That's slavery. That's right, boys and girls. And you thought slavery had been abolished with the 13th Amendment. Well, let me welcome you back to reality. You have sold yourselves into slavery, just like you did when you sold yourselves into Egyptian slavery. You sold yourselves to Pharaoh. And your God came over and he freed you. And he gave you a law at Mount Sinai. And he said, don't practice debt, don't practice usury, and don't practice paper money. And here's my 15 economic laws. And you said, no, we're not going to practice that. This is America, the land of the free and the home of the brave. And we're going to have a central bank, like the fifth plank to the Communist Manifesto dictates. And we're going to have an income tax, like the second plank to the Communist Manifesto dictates. And we're going to have Social Security and income retirement, like the eighth plank to the Communist Manifesto dictates. And we are going to have peace and prosperity. And we're going to have paper money. And we're going to have usury and interest and credit cards and debt and stocks and bonds. Now, boys and girls, it's time to wake up and smell coffee here. In all of the history of the world, we have used fiat paper money. We have used usury and interest. You know, the practice of charging interest on debt wasn't something that was invented by Bill Clinton and George Bush or Ben Bernanke or Alan Greenspan. It's been around since Moses. And God warned you then. He said, don't do that. But you became an accessory before and after the fact. When you signed that mortgage, when you bought that car, when you bought that big screen TV, when you signed that application for the credit card. And boys and girls, you have become the proximate cause of your own injury. And now we're calling this depression the credit crisis. We haven't even got started on this thing yet. Now maybe you'd like to get off this ship. This isn't a very good boat. You get a 300-foot hole right down the side of it. This ship, the United States of America, Australia, Canada, New Zealand, is going to sink to the bottom. They're going to take you with it. So if you'd like to get off this boat, why don't you start here by calling Franklin Sanders. It's 888-218-9226. Remember that? Write it down. 888-218-9226. It's the October 2008 issue of The Money Changer. I think that'll change your life. Hey, I'm about out of time, so let me give you a reminder here that you have been listening to The Law Hour and Editorial Review. It's sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. Remember, The Law Hour is heard 7 days a week here in the United States, and we're heard around the world in more than 120 countries daily over the Internet and radio. Now, if you'd like more information about The Law School and The Law Hour, why don't you go to our website, georgegordon.org, georgegordon.org. The Law School is a private, non-commercial, non-profit, non-sectarian law school that is open to individuals but by prearrangement. The Law School conducts a homeschooling program for adults and compact desk in the law. Our website is updated weekly. It has a radio log schedule and archives, all of which can be accessed through our website at georgegordon.org. All of these Law Hour programs are archived on the Internet by title and date for your listening convenience, and the Law Hour is an educational service brought to you in the public interest. Our time's up. We've got to leave it right there, so we'll see you back here tomorrow night, same time, same station, God willing, of course. So until then, thanks for listening, everybody, and good night, friends.